This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My newest fantasy series is going strong. Readers have enjoyed Diamond Stained, and now Oban and Avena return for their fifth and final story. Things have never been more dangerous. They have survived the chaos of Cash, explored the dark mysteries of the Ruby Ruins, protected the Obsidian Mine, and obtained the Emerald Strength. But can they survive the Amethyst Shattering? The entirety of the five-book Secret of the Jewels series is out on Amazon and free in Kindle Unlimited. Today, I'm joined by Lee Murray. She is the multi-award-winning author of the horror collection Grotesque, Monster Stories.
Hi, Lee. How are you doing today?
Hi, James. How are you? I'm good.
Oh, good. It's starting to warm up here as the day is coming on. How about you?
Oh, no, I haven't even seen the sunshine yet here in New Zealand. It's 5 a.m. on Tuesday morning, and there isn't even a peep of the dawn yet. So it's winter, so it might be another hour or so away. But I've got my cup of coffee, and the heater is on, so I'm all good.
All right. So I always like to start out my interviews with a fun question or two. And since you're a horror, I'd ask, are you afraid of the dark?
That's really good. You know, I am not afraid of the dark, but I am afraid of what's in the dark, I guess, is the answer to that. When I was a very little girl, I used to think that there was a wolf under my bed, and because my head would hit the pillow, and you know, if you press your head into the pillow and your ear is hard against the fabric, sometimes you can hear your own pulse in your ear, and it goes crunch, yeah. Crunch, crunch. And I used to think it was a wolf under my bed. And I remember telling my dad this, and he said, there are no wolves in New Zealand, which of course there are not. And, you know, you're just making it up. And it kind of has become a little bit of a metaphor for my own anxiety, actually. And I actually wrote a story called Peter and the Wolf about a little boy who knows there's a wolf under his bed. And one day the wolf gets out through the gap in the door, and he is worried for his brother. So I'm kind of, yes, I'm scared of the things that walk in the darkness, I guess. But, you know, the I think the thing about horror is that it does allow us to address our fears. So, you know, monsters, for example, are a metaphor for the things that frighten us. And you know, they're a way to explain the unexplained. They're a way to address some of the things that frighten us in life. And so that's kind of a little bit why I like to write about monsters, and I like to write horror, because it allows me to address these real world issues in a fictional way. And that kind of puts them on the page. It puts them in their place. I kind of can compartmentalize them, if you like. It allows me to sort of address those issues from a safe distance.
Okay. Yeah, I was actually one of the questions I was going to ask you about, like, what drew you to writing horror. So it's kind of therapeutic for you.
Yeah, it is, because I do suffer from anxiety, and it's not. I came late to that kind of diagnosis, and I've only really in the last couple of years been quite vocal about it, because it's interesting. There are a huge number of writers who are, you know, suffer from these things. I mean, it's just very prevalent in our community with all the stresses that are on people now. And particularly Asian people, they're less likely to get help and support for it. And horror writers, it's really uncanny, because they're really a very gregarious, sort of very, very friendly, happy sort of bunch. But actually, under the surface, a lot of them are dealing with quite serious mental issues and anxiety and depression. So it is a very good way to get those things on the page and sort of manageable, if you like, or at least sort of to write yourself out of a difficult place. And in fact, a lot of our very our iconic writers of horror have been people who have suffered from depression. Lovecraft, Stephen King's made a very strong. You know, he's been very open about his sort of substance abuse and mental health King issues.
I read his Dark Tower books, where he was quite critical of his past self when he put himself into his book.
But I also was worried. He was also worried about not having that mental illness, not having those concerns, because he was worried that he would lose his muse, you know. And so it was almost a sort of, you know, self-serving excuse, if you like. I don't know. That's probably not fair. But he was worried that if he stopped drinking and if he stopped, you know, didn't have this depression, that he might lose his ability to write with that kind of intensity and the emotion that clearly goes into his work, because it engages us all, does it not?
It's really hard to say what it is about King's writing that I like. I don't know. It's always, I tend to find I either really like it right at the start, or I have to get really far into a book and then I might like it. But yeah, for some reason he works. I don't really like reading horror, but I've always kind of enjoyed reading his books.
Well, I think the thing is, a thing about horror is it is a spectrum. You know, it's not just, you know, it's not just haunted houses and serial killers. It's that whole spectrum of what makes us uneasy, all the way to sort of really what is shocking and horrible and brutal. And so there's quite a spectrum. And I think readers bring their own experience to any reading situation, any story, and so a different reader will take something different from a particular story because they have certain lived experience. So for example, if you're talking about emotional abuse, certain people have very strong feelings towards emotional abuse because they may have experienced it as a child or at some stage in their lives, or they've seen it, you know, and felt, you know, the implications for other people and more closely. And so in those circumstances, people will perhaps feel a story more keenly than someone who hasn't had those experiences.
Okay. So when did you know you wanted to be a writer?
You know, I kind of always scribbled and I did want to be a writer. I remember telling my dad I wanted to be a writer when I was very young, and might have been 9 or 10, and dad was, you know, really encouraging. Both my parents were about writing, in fact. But then my dad said later on, and a little bit later when I got to high school and I did a lot of sciences and languages, and my dad said, you know what, I think you need to get a proper job. And when you've got a proper job, then you can be, then you can do what you like. You've got something to fall back on. So I went into sciences, in fact, and I did a couple of master's degrees, one in science, physiology, and I was a research scientist for some time, and then I also did a master's degree in management studies. And so, you know, I had what I needed, but in fact my science does really inform my writing. I do write a lot of science fiction and fantasy, you know, with those horror elements. And so so in a way it kind of was a roundabout way of coming to writing, but I still think that those things were important. They've kind of informed the person I am.
Yeah. So I mean, I imagine physiology is really important when you're creating your own monsters and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, when you're pulling about humans, you kind of need to know, you know, what muscles connected to the next when you rip them apart.
I've had to Google some of that stuff before.
Yes, I think that's true, James. If they look up our browsing histories, writers like you and I, we'd probably be in a lot of trouble. We probably need to put a disclaimer on our browsing histories for the FBI or whoever it is that comes looking sometime in the future.
Yes, I mean, I was just looking up how they made bombs in Victorian times for our book. It wasn't like I wanted to make a bomb.
Oh God, that's interesting. I'd like to read that. So what's this book, and tell me about it.
Well, it was really a smoke bomb. So I had to, I needed to make a smoke bomb. And my fantasy setting is about like just the start of the Industrial Revolution. So I was like, well, how would you do a smoke bomb back then? And so I did some research, and it was actually very simple. You just need to take ammonia No, chlorine. You need to take chlorine. You need to boil it till you get chlorine crystals. And then you mix it with potash muriatate, which is a fertilizer, and it makes potcrite. And potcrite is an explosive used in primers for guns for hundreds of years.
Right.
And it makes a really it's a very energetic reaction. Then you just need baking powder or baking soda, baking soda as what burns to make the smoke. And if you want to dye it, you can use like a saffron to just like dye it a color. And so it was really a simple thing. And so chlorine in, what they called water, they named it, the scientists who discovered how to make chlorine the liquid, they just named it after themselves. So like they were French. So they called it like water of, I don't remember the scientist's name, but that was available for textile dyeing.
It's early, called it like 18, Eau de Javal. 18,
yeah. Yeah. So I couldn't call it that in my fantasy book. So I just called it water of white, but because of like, yeah. Well, I can't bring a real person's name into my book. It's like, why did you have to name it after yourself?
Yeah, it's a fantasy world. Absolutely, because that just jolts people out of the world, doesn't it? It's called Eau de Javel, and actually there's a place in just outside of Paris, which is called Javel, which is where it's – yeah. All right, well, I lived for a while in Paris, so that's how I know the – that's how I know the name. So, yeah, isn't it interesting when you go down these sort of research rabbit holes and uncover all these interesting things? You know, I had a similar research experience because in my book, in my Tane McKenna Adventures series, I've got a book called Into the Sounds where the protagonists look for a way to refire a punt gun, an old Victorian punt gun from, a fowling gun. And they looked for, things that they could use in the New Zealand natural environment in order to rearm a punt gun. So along the same sort of lines as your research, but they just had to find the ingredients, if you like, to create an explosion from the real world environment. So that was fun too. It's just the kind of thing, isn't it? You just get so interesting to go off down these rabbit holes and find these interesting snippets, and they do add so much authenticity to the reading. And if you get some of these little facts wrong, readers, they know that they're quite discerning. Yeah. All you need is just to jolt them out of the story and you've lost them. So it is really important that we get these research aspects correct.
Yeah. I know once I had to research how to make the acids. I don't remember what's like, but I researched how they did it, like, old times. It's something that's been around for, thousands of years. I think it was Aqua Regal. I think it was. But I had to research it, and it turned, I had to go to like how they made ink to get the iron. Wow. To make it, because they use iron-based inks for a long time.
Yes.
They got it usually from acorns, I think.
Oh,
weirdly.
I didn't know that. Wow, that is interesting.
It's been a couple of years since I did the research on this, so it's a little blurry now. But yeah, it's always fun.
Yeah, that does sound fun. I look forward to reading the next book with the smoke bomb, and that sounds like a steampunk fantasy or something. I definitely want to read that.
Yeah, it's like magic replaced our technology. It just sees jewel crystal technology, and so they're going through their industrial. There's like all these textile mills, so it worked out. So there's textile mills and all that stuff in the city, and so. And there's like bakeries, and so everything I needed was already like in place, because this is the third book, so it was already in place in the writing. So yeah, it worked out great.
Oh, I look forward to that.
It's already published. It's Obsidian Mind is when I use the smoke bomb.
Oh, okay. So all right, I'll look for that one. Yeah.
Let's talk about your book though. That's. You just released a horror anthology, right? Grotesque Monster Stories.
Yeah, it's called like it's a collection actually, James. This is something that readers don't really often don't know. But if you see the word anthology, it usually means that it's written by a group of authors. So there's a series. Yeah, and if you've written a collection, then it's a single author. So this is my very first collection of short stories. And it's called Grotesque Monster Stories. So very pleased to finally, after sort of 10 or 12 years of full-time writing, put out my very first collection. And it includes around about half of the book is old favourite stories that I've written in the past. There's a couple of award winners in there. And then I wrote some new stories fresh for this particular collection, including a Tane McKenna adventure, which is, it's a novella that... that spins off my Tane McKenna series, military fiction series. So yeah. Nice. So really proud of it. And Things in the Well from Australia published the book, and I've got absolutely gorgeous cover art from Steve Chapman, who is a writer and artist from Australia. So he's actually the president of the Australian Horror Writers Association. So he's very active in the community. So he really kind of he's done a couple of my covers, and he really does kind of understand that sort of dark fiction, appeal. So that's always wonderful to work with a cover artist who has that understanding.
Awesome. So it's a collection of stories that's kind of your own unique take on monsters, yes?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's monsters as metaphor, of course. There's automatons in there, and there's dragons, and there's New Zealand dragons, Taniwha dragon type things, and there's Chinese dragons, and there's zombies, and there's some golem, and there's some patu paerehe, which are kind of a Maori traditional fairy, if you like. They live in the forest, a little bit mischievous. So there's one that I just conjured out of a Maori legend, and so that I kind of created a particular monster based around a legend that we live with quite closely here in New Zealand. So yeah, so it's a bit of a mixture, and there's a sort of mix of themes and of styles. So there's one story in there that's slightly YA, sort of a YA dystopia, and then there's others that are straight out horror. There's a couple of Lovecraftian sort of feel stories.
Quite I'll a admit bit that's of an eclectic the horror I mix. Like the most.
The Lovecraftian,
I really adore Lovecraft. Yeah, there's something about the inhumanness of Lovecraft's writing.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a kind of style to it, that notion of sort of descent into madness. And of course, you know, we were already talking about mental health issues, and a lot of those, a lot of times we're dealing with those kinds of internal mental issues. I mean, if you think of Poe, for example, his writing was, you know, all the horror you can get into one character's head. So I think that writing about monsters is, it was just kind of interesting, because it turned out that a lot of my stories had monsters in them. And so it was a nice place to start for a first collection.
Awesome. So what is your favorite story from the collection?
Yeah, isn't it funny that people always ask this? What's your favorite story from the collection? I think I was...
Is it like asking what's your favorite child, right?
Yeah, sort of. Although I always feel like that my favorite story is going to be the next one I write, because, you know, I'm always trying to strive to be a better writer every time and explore a different way to create a story. But I did really like writing the Tane McKenna adventure, because I hadn't written one of those stories for over a year. So it was really nice to go back to familiar characters that I knew and that I wanted to see where they were going. So I did really enjoy that. But in terms of, you know, a favorite, what's really interesting with this collection, and I've had a few advanced readers put up reviews from various horror sites, and what's been really interesting is that I don't think I've had two or three, you know, reviews that have really said this is my favorite and it's been the standout of the collection. There have been. Everyone said this is a standout or this is a standout, but it's never been the same story. So, nice. You know, yeah. So this one appeals to someone, you know, my colleague Rena Mason, who wrote a lovely blurb for the book. She's a three-time Bram Stoker Award winner. She said, it's one of the best zombie stories I've ever read in that collection. And what's really interesting is that probably the only zombie story I've ever written. But she said it was really a fresh take. So she really liked that one. A couple of other reviewers said they really liked the flash fiction piece, Heart Music, which is just a couple of pages long, and it talks about a grave robber. You know, the David Wood, the USA best-selling author who wrote the introduction, said his favorite story was Edward's Journal, which is kind of a letter writing story set in the 1800s during the New Zealand Wars. And so he liked that one. He said that one was his favorite. And that particular story
was very much a callback to that. That's a, letter writing books are very much a callback to that period of literature, right? I mean, like Bram Stoker's Dracula and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Those are really just collections of letters, right?
That's exactly right, and that's why that works very well for those kinds of historical fiction stories, because it fits entirely into that time, just as same way as you might get a story now for youth, which has texts. Messages in it, or email, or something like that. So I think, you need to fit your technical literary devices to the style of the day. So it's been interesting that everyone's had a different feel about what they thought was the best story in it, and it just proves that point I made earlier that everyone brings something different to a story. The readers bring their own experience, and so different stories resonate them. For them, for different reasons.
Oh, that is really great to hear. So what are your inspirations? Like, where do you draw literary inspirations from, or story ideas from?
Yeah, so I kind of steal them. You know, it's
children. It's called borrowing and paying.
Something like that. Well, you know, when I talk at schools, they say, "Well, where do you get your story ideas?" And I kind of say, "Well, I look around me." But I always tell them, you know, I say I steal. I steal ideas from characters, traits from different people I meet. I steal ideas from the newspaper. I steal them from everywhere. You know. I extrapolate, so I take a little idea and I exaggerate it to something bigger. I eavesdrop on people's conversations, and then I use tidbits of those things, not their personal information, but, you know, the way that their voices and the way they speak and the language they use, you know. So I tell them that I do all these naughty things, and they kind of like that, you know. So I always say that. But you know, I tend to use New Zealand as an inspiration a lot, and particularly the New Zealand landscape. We've got so many wonderful geographical features that make for fabulous stories, you know. So, for example, the legend of New Zealand, of the way that our ancestor Maui supposedly fished New Zealand out of the ocean. It was a fish. So the North Island of New Zealand is called Te Ika a Maui, which means the fish of Maui, who is this sort of Maori demigod. And you remember Maui from Moana, you know, the movie Moana, the children's movie Moana.
Never saw that one.
Oh,
I'll admit Maori is one of the few cultures and there's not, you don't really find much of it, at least over here in the States. I'd really would love to learn more about Maori's mythology, because I do love everyone's mythologies. Are always so much fun to read.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to say that it's a mythology, because, you know, it's a living religion here in New Zealand. When I say religion, it's a way of life. It's very.
I also enjoy studying living religions too.
Exactly. I mean, because the people's beliefs and cultures are integral to the way they think and they behave, and. Yep. So it is very, you know, and it's a beautiful, beautiful mythology, if you like to call it that. And it is underrepresented, if you like, in world literature. I mean, we're a tiny little country down the bottom of the world here. And, you know, one of the things that number of readers have said is that what we've enjoyed about your stories, Lee, is that you have introduced us to some of these new ideas and that we haven't seen in other literature. In fact, someone wrote in my Into the Mist, in a review of Into the Mist, it's simply, you know, the mythology was just so original and new to them, that made the story completely fresh. And so, and I think, you know, I do think my stories are very New Zealand-centric. They do introduce those sorts of ideas that perhaps have not been, in ways that haven't been introduced in other literature. But believe me, we have some fantastic talent down here in New Zealand writing science fiction and fantasy. And so,
yes, you're the sixth New Zealand author I've interviewed on this podcast. And
Oh, so you will have had Darian Smith perhaps, and Mark Johnson perhaps, and Eileen Mueller perhaps.
Eileen Mueller, yes, definitely. I remember, I'm really bad with names, though. I might have interviewed those others.
But, yeah, I think like, probably I'm terrible have. With names. Yes,
I mean, definitely Eileen Mueller, but I've just noticed that like it's New Zealand. It's like United States is where most of them are from. Then New Zealand is like the next biggest place
that people really? Have been interviewed. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Well, I guess it's part of the issue is that New Zealanders find it very hard to be discoverable. You know, New Zealand writers, because we are sort of stuck off down the end here. Getting books into New Zealand is very difficult. We don't have any, really don't have any literary agents. We don't have any big publishers publishing science fiction and fantasy. There's a few micro presses, and they're sort of run by really passionate people, but there's a sort of precarious, you know, when you're writing with very small presses. So, you know, for New Zealanders, you know, who write a lot of New Zealand writers self-publish. I don't particularly myself. I have a couple of self-published things, but mostly my work is with publishers. But, you know, getting your work discovered abroad can be quite difficult for New Zealand writers. So,
yeah, I imagine. Well, so what is up next for you in your writing career?
Oh, I've just launched Grotesque, so Monster Stories, and that's actually on sale at the moment. So anyone would like to get a copy, now is the time, because it's only 99 cents. The publisher's been very kind at putting it out there, very, very low price, so very quickly to get it a bit of momentum in this pandemic. So that one's just come out September.
We'll have a link for that at the bottom of the post.
Oh, thank you, James. It's very kind.
Yep.
Yeah, and so in September I have a book called Black Cranes, Tales of Unquiet Women. I'm also an anthologist, so I do a lot of editing and curating of anthologies. This will be my 15th dark fiction anthology. And so this brings together Asian writers, Southeast Asian writers, or writers of Southeast Asian descent like myself. So I'm a New Zealand born Chinese, and these are all sort of dark fiction speculative stories by people of Southeast Asian descent. It's quite a bit mouthful, isn't it? And very excited, award-winning writers from all over the world, really, really excited. I think we've got something very special there. So and it has a foreword by Alma Katsu, who wrote The Hunger. She's a very well-known writer. So yeah, that's exciting. And then later in the year, in November, the third book in my Path of Ra series, which I write with Dan Raybarts, he's a Wellington author, that will be coming out from Raw Dog Screaming Press. It's called Blood of the Sun, and it's a supernatural crime noir thriller set in the near future New Zealand, and that's a kind of he said, she said story where my colleague Dan writes one character. He writes a character called Matthew, and I write a character called Penny, who happens to be a scientist, a Chinese scientist, who is his half-sister, or sister by adoption, or Fongai, we call it here in New Zealand. So, yeah, so those are two more books that are coming out this year. I've got a lot of short stories coming out. In fact, I've got a short story coming out in Weird Tales, issue 364. I am the first New Zealand writer, I believe, that's ever been published in Weird Tales. So that's super, super exciting for me.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The magazine has a really long history, 23 years. I think most people have seen it or know of it. So it's an iconic sort of magazine. And, I've got a number of archivists running around looking, checking for me. But as far as we're aware, there's never been a New Zealander in the magazine. So that's pretty exciting news for me. I'm very, very excited. I think that's coming out in October. Yeah. So where
can our listeners find you on the internet?
Oh, yes, you can look me up on the internet. It's leemurray.info is the website. I'm on social media. I'm on Facebook. I have a reader group. If anyone's interested in joining the Facebook reader group, it's called Monster Readers. So yeah, hop in there. We have often have you know, it's fairly new, but we'll be having a little bit more in the way of sort of chat and giveaways. I've got discounted books from some of my colleagues, so that's a good place to find me. I'll definitely be in there if anyone would like to chat with me.
Awesome. Well, it was really great chatting with you, Lee.
Yeah, that went fast, didn't it?
Yep. Well, you have a good day.
Thank you very much for having me on, James. I've really enjoyed this, and best of luck with your writing endeavors as well.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com. And follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.